Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, our Bacta tank of talk. Dive into the Bacta tank with us. I'll think through that before I say it again. Anyway, happy to be here doing one of our deep dive episodes. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Cat Napsok. I'm swimming in the deep end with you, my friend.
It was meant to be like a really calming image. And then I just pictured this like just massive pool of Bacta. And then I asked, is that healthy for like hundreds of people to be swimming in? I don't know. The intention was good. Put it that way. Anyway, enough about Bacta. Let's move on to what we're actually talking about this episode. We are thrilled to finally be able to start discussing Star Wars Visions. This is, of course, the Star Wars, several short Star Wars pieces, stories, from all Japanese anime studios released on Disney Plus. We are going to talk about the first four of these shorts. And then next week on our deep dive, we will talk about the remainder. But before we get into all of that, we want to remind you that, as always, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we're recommending Out of the Shadows by Justina Ireland, the latest, greatest High Republic book. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook. Ken, that is not all.
That is not all. We have another offer. Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, is offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending the Inside Editions book, The Lightsaber Collection. Again, use the link insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. Great book. We recommend it. And there might be some additions from Star Wars Visions that we need to put in that book after some cool designs that we're going to be talking about today. So there you go. Deal for all of you.
Yeah, so check out that lightsaber collection, because I think we're going to say the word lightsaber a few times as we discuss Visions Part 1, as we're calling it, because we're dividing it up. It's, of course, available on Disney Plus right now. We were lucky to get some screeners so we could re-watch them and record a little bit of ahead of time. Can't wait to be able to watch these on the big screen and enjoy them all again for the first time on the big screen. 9 total episodes of Visions, Ken, each around 15 to 20 minutes. And we want to dive into them all, but again, we're just starting with that first 4 so we can really sink our teeth into them, and we will discuss the other 5 next week so we can really give them their due. Ken, I want to start off with just some general questions about this project. We talked about it a lot as it was being announced. Trailer came out. Now that you've got to see the first 4, what is your overall reaction?
I think my overall reaction is that this is a giant victory for all involved. I was so not sure what we were going to get, even after the trailers and the art and all the cool things we broke down and what it might mean. And is that a Boba Fett ship? No, it turns out it's just Boba Fett. All those kind of things. I still didn't know what to expect. I really didn't. And each time I pressed play, I was glued to like finding out this world and finding out fast. These little short films, they don't need to spend a lot of time, or they can't spend a lot of time on the world building. So you get, it's one or two lines and you're into the story. And a lot of it's just based on what you know. And so I had a fun experience watching them. I think there's a lot of wonderful things in them. I can't wait to discuss. I will say this up top, if you allow me, Joseph, a pre-apology or a pre just, hey, give me a little leeway. There's so many cool concepts. I found myself while watching it saying, oh my, what if that was to be like in a Star Wars movie or just be in Star Wars? And that can be very unintentionally, maybe even intentionally disrespectful to those creating them, as if I was to say, great idea, give me that and let me put it in my Star Wars. No, this, a couple times I might even mess up and say, oh yeah, I'd love to see a movie. I want to acknowledge it so I'm not sounding too disrespectful, because I love some of the concepts here today. And that just means they're wonderful and inspiring, and that maybe these creators could help put stuff like this into official Star Wars canon, because that was a big debate coming into Visions, right? No canon, which, by the way, I think was a benefit to this series so far. So anyways, that's kind of my overall thing. Really enjoyed what I watched.
Yeah, I want to start my overall discussion by just reacting to what you're saying. I think that's so great, and it's almost like we need language for it. Like, these are Star Wars stories, right? They're real, they exist, they're valid. There's a difference between just a Star Wars story of any kind and what we are kind of considering modern canon Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
So maybe talking about modern canon makes the most sense for when we want to express that. There's also for me a little bit of, there's difference between ideas that you can find aplenty in books and comics and then kind of seeing those ideas on screen. So that's another differentiation for me. Because there are a lot of things like, yeah, that design is cool. That tech is cool. That would be great to see on the big screen in canon Star Wars.
Yeah.
But like a thing in particular that just lit up in my mind, because I know it has been dealt with a lot in books and sometimes comics, but it's one of those things that I've always wanted to see just really torn into on screen, is the relationship between music, entertainment, and gangsters, you know?
Yes.
And that one of these is just about that idea that's just right there, ready to be plucked, low-hanging Star Wars fruit. And it was so great to see it on screen. And that was the idea that made me go like, I want to see that in this wonderful Star Wars story, but also in modern canon Star Wars.
Yeah. Thanks for clarifying, Ed. And that I'm not alone. but I just want to be able to phrase it correctly.
Right, right, right. It would be very easy to, you know, accidentally say, I want to see this in real Star Wars or proper Star Wars, and that's not what we mean, right?
I don't want him coming and be like, yoink, let me have that. That's not what I mean.
Exactly, exactly. I think my overall reaction, I was just really blown away. These were exactly what I hoped they would be in terms of the range of ideas. I really like that these are both powerful and fun. These are just these four episodes across the arc of them. They are really latching on to what I keep referring to as kind of like the tension of Star Wars. There's the adventure serial with all the just the aesthetic of Star Wars being joyful and weird and fun and sometimes even silly. And then there's just this absolute depth of myth and how do you recover from loss and is there any good way to fight a war? All these huge, deep ideas. And just these first four reveled in both of those pillars of Star Wars, you know?
Big themes at play. And despite being short films, the speed of some of them, particularly the first episode one, episode four in this, they were slow and contemplative. For short films, that's a hard trick to pull off. Not that the other ones didn't have great moments of reflection and introspection, but those ones to just... It allowed me to kind of think everything that's going through and things you're talking about, the right way to fight wars, if there's at all, right? Big questions, big Star Wars questions. So I love the atmosphere that they created.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Sorry, we got in an accidental cycle of just agreeing for a second, which is fine and good.
Hey,
yes, you're right. You're right.
We've been recording remotely for over a year and a half, and we only have a couple times where the breaks get pressed, and we don't know the other person doing it.
Yes, it happens time to time. I think other big picture thing for me is just it was so great to see when a lot of different creators interpret Star Wars, the different ways they engage with it, because sometimes it's visually, sometimes it's thematically, sometimes it's sound design, sometimes it's music, you know, just the different ways that Star Wars was meshing with different ideas of anime, right? Sometimes there's real Star Wars music. Sometimes there's much more traditional anime music and just a really fun way to look at Star Wars by seeing what different creators go like, well, if I'm making a Star Wars, I got to have this in it.
Yeah. You know? I loved hearing some of the Star Wars, but some of the more effective bits were the songs that sounded like nothing like Star Wars before. It worked really well. And I was even surprised by that for myself because, you know, we love the music. Even Mandalorian, when a familiar theme pops in, which doesn't happen often, you're like, ooh, Star Wars music. So I enjoyed the use of music in this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And final big picture thing for me, and maybe it'll pop up a little bit as we talk about it, but just really enjoying the cultural reinterpretation, the complete circle, right, of Lucas being inspired by a lot of Japanese storytelling and now Japanese storytellers riffing on Star Wars, that circle. And it's really interesting to see kind of what ideas are just like, yep, no, that these ideas are, they make sense in the context of Star Wars and in the context of this cultural storytelling traditions. And then there's some moments where it feels like, well, this storytelling tradition that is very essential to anime is like, we're doing that, you know, and it sits well with Star Wars, but it isn't exactly Star Wars.
Yeah. Some fun, fun little Easter eggs, even a Wilhelm screen, all that kind of stuff. Like take definitely inspired Star Wars, but I think they did such a good job. I got lost in a few of them and was no longer looking for the connections or feeling, you know, just was like the story itself. So the circle is complete, as you would say.
Yeah, yeah. Final question for you, Ken. We're getting to watch these on the screeners, but very soon they are releasing. By the time this is released, they will be on Disney Plus, which is why we're talking about them. But they're released in this binge style, where it's just all episodes. How do you feel about that?
I think for this particular project, it worked very well. A lot of them, I keep saying, short films with their shorter episodes. I think it take some of the pressure off of them that Star Wars programming would just no doubt face, right? And these are going to face it too, where it's just like expectations, interest, debate, discourse, all those things that can kind of get us down and grumpy. But I just think if you were doing it one at a time, if one particular episode didn't hit, particularly if it's early on in the run, you'd have a week of and I just think this project needed to just come out and be live and breathe on its own and be engaged with on its own time, and the binge really worked. Because I've been on a old grumpy man is happy to see shows come out weekly again, friends. Like, I'm Grace and I even debate. She's a binger. She wants that. I'm like, well, of course, yeah, you're a young whippersnapper. We waited for Cheers every week. And I think it's valuable for some of the big properties, MCU and Lucasfilm, Star Wars stuff, to be allowed to have that time to simmer. This one, I'm glad it all came out at once.
Yeah, totally agree. I think for like serialized narrative, there's cliffhangers. What's Mando going to be up to next? I think it is great to be week by week, but it really made sense for me for this because the each individual short has its absolute power, but it is also like this thing that's almost more the sum of its parts gives it power to see like here's the range of ideas. So to be able to just go through the range of ideas in is many or as few sittings as you want is really powerful.
Yeah, and again, if it were longer, I think it would work. But I think just being able to sit, and again, just for us right now, the first four episodes, but just be able to sit in that mood and atmosphere created by all of them worked for me.
Yeah, and quick question for you, and then we're going to get into the individual shorts. Did you watch all of them, or did you just watch the first four that we're talking about today?
I just watched the first four, quite frankly, because of time. I was having enough fun that I had that thought of, should I just go ahead? But with you and I, you know, we have some busy schedules going on sometimes in life. Who doesn't out there? But I just stuck to the four.
Yeah, same thing. So please, no listeners, I'm sure many listeners are going to be able to just binge them all. We've watched the first four episodes. We have not watched the last five, which we will and get to discuss them all next week. So with that, let's dive into the first episode, episode one, The Duel, created by the animation studio Kamikaze Douga, I believe. Let's go into that. Ken, what was your big picture reaction to this short? Did you like it, love it, struggle with it? Where you at?
I think at the end of the day, I just had the benefit of rewatching this one twice and found myself really loving, we talk about atmospheres and moods, really loving what this one did with the tone of these probably the entire series going forward, but also with this circle is complete thing we keep talking about. I thought, as someone, and I am not completely steeped in both the anime and Japanese film history like others are. I know the influence on Star Wars. We get it. We discuss it. I even did a couple years at like film school. We watched some Kurosawa films. I'm just not an expert in it. And that's what, this is just me being honest. But this one, with the black and white, the Ronin, the more maybe classic samurai style and vibe to this one, the wandering Ronin, the samurai hitting town. It just had a look and the feel of maybe some of the clips of a Kurosawa film you might have seen all your life and how that just flows so powerfully into Star Wars that I really gravitated to the tone and the look that was presented by this one.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page on this one. This is, I absolutely loved this one. This one might be my favorite. The lucky thing is, that's fun to say, but then I don't need to have favorites. They can all be my favorite, but I really, I really loved this one. This one really spoke to me. It's so great to start it off with such a direct, you know, if Kurosawa made Star Wars, not if they were just, you know, in this current circle, obviously Kurosawa influenced Star Wars, but now we're in this great circle and just like, well, what if it just was absolutely Kurosawa made Star Wars? Like you, I am not an expert by any means. I relatively recently watched Seven Samurai, and that's the film that this one seemed to be riffing on most prominently. And I thought it was just kind of great that this is sort of jumping into the middle of a Star Wars version of Seven Samurai, which is funny since Star Wars has done at least two riffs directly on Seven Samurai, Clone Wars and The Mandalorian. But just I love that was like literally not just the aesthetic, the influence, the themes, but the actual plot of like we're jumping into the middle where the villagers have already found some people to defend them. And there's some cool Star Wars aliens. But then wait, there's this other twist of the Ronin. So I really love that. The other thing that I love big picture about The Duel is for years here on Force Center, myself and you as well have been on about the power of Star Wars being a tip of the iceberg storytelling, where you know everything you need to know to follow the main plot, but then you get little glimpses of other adventures that you could explore. Everything from mentioning the Clone Wars in the first film to Ord Mantell to what is the Battle of Tanab to what does that technology do to, you know, how does that cantina even survive financially? Like, you know, everything in Star Wars, and particularly the big screen, has this great, I'm enjoying the story I'm watching now, and it is making me want to watch 1,000 more stories. And the duel here was perhaps the best tip of the iceberg Star Wars storytelling I have ever seen, to the point where it clearly worked on Lucasfilm since they commissioned a novel based on it.
Yes. And you know what's so funny? We had summaries of some of these episodes, and I knew that that novel was coming, and I kind of had disconnected from all that information. I didn't even go look it up to be like, oh, which one was this? It totally makes sense. So you're kind of like refreshing my brain right now. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense, because I absolutely want to see this story continue or no more than any of the stories.
Yeah.
So that's a great point.
Yeah, so it clearly worked. And yes, that is the novel. I'm scrolling down here to my notes. Ronin by Emma Miko Kandan is out October 12th. There's a great synopsis that lets you know that some of the things that are mysterious in the short are meant to be mysterious. And maybe we'll learn more about them in the novel, or maybe it will be more great tip of the iceberg storytelling. So I also want to be sure to focus in just on the animation style as well, because that's where these shorts get their great variety. How did you feel about this animation style?
I'm trying to think the other ones. I have thoughts on every one of them. And they're all relatively positive. This one was, I had to choose to engage with it a little bit in a sense of, like, again, I love the style of the black and white and everything, but this was the first one, and I sat down with a bowl of pasta. I'm like, what are we watching? And I sound like I'm negative, but I just can't explain it fully, Joseph. Just like I was waiting for everything to pop. And I think the other ones kind of grabbed me a little bit more at the big imagery and everything. This one, the ink moving on my screen. It took me a little bit to engage with it. The second viewing, I wasn't focused on that. I was focused on what I was hearing more than even what I was seeing, the dialogue, the atmosphere, the mood, the music. So this was probably the least favorite style of these four, but also the right choice to launch the series. I know I'm all across dark and light side with that comment.
No. You are wrestling with your honest feelings, which is great. And we should have some sort of Star Wars sound effect that goes off for the rare occasions where we're not entirely on the same page.
There you go.
Because this is probably my favorite of the aesthetics as well, of the animation. Mm-hmm. And I think what spoke to me about it is maybe just from my own life experience, you know, going to art school and drawing a lot as a kid, that this great kinetic energy of it looking almost sketched, right?
Right.
It is very precision animation, but it has that animation style that is obviously, it is utter precision, but it makes you feel like this just came flowing, exploding out of someone, like just a rough idea that happens to be beautiful and perfect. And then the fact that I wonder if some people dislike this, but it went so far to connect Star Wars Kurosawa to film, to the point where there are like scratches on it, right? Like you're watching an old film. I really love that aesthetic to just drive home like, yeah, this is what we're doing and we know it. Yeah. And we want you to know it. But I think there was a part of me that so much of this story, Kurosawa, the parts of Star Wars that were influenced by that are all about this sort of melancholy feeling that there's been huge power, there's been huge conflict, and now we're in the time right after that conflict where maybe the great power that used to be is disappearing. And it's just got this feeling of that there are older things that have great power, and they're right on the edge of us forgetting about them, but then they come roaring back to life. And at this point in our experience, you know, you and I still remember, I'm sure many people still remember, hey, you used to go to the theater and all of the films would look like this with scratches and little jumps, right? And there's that sense of the old that is getting old enough now to start to verge on being forgotten, but it's roaring back to life. And the fact that the aesthetic of it mirrored that thematic idea of the characters and the narrative was just gangbusters to me.
I mean, I got no counter to that. I'm gonna punch back on that. No, and hear you describe with the scratches in the film, and there was a all the way through, just it had history. It had time to it. I can get behind that. I can get behind that. Again, I said, I the second viewing, you're not held up on things. I still think it was the right choice to start the entire show. But well said on why you love it. I'm struggling to explain why I didn't fully gravitate to it. So I'm just going to move on. Watch it again.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious. Do you feel like, so you felt like the animation, you were distracted by it, so it made it harder for you to get into the narrative?
It made me want things just like kick it up in a high gear. That said, wait till I discuss the other episodes, the third one, where I thought it was a little too loud and too fast.
Okay, so you're almost talking about just sort of like pacing.
It slowed things down almost too much. But again, I love slow roasted things. I love the reflection. I did not want the Ronin himself to move any faster than he did, because it was very purposeful, very thoughtful, very reflective. I think when I'm sitting down and the things in the back of my head from even the trailers or the promotional posters, I was like, okay, this is tremendously, wonderfully artistic, artsy. And I don't know if I wanted this at this time.
Got it.
Makes sense. But then the black and white versus the color of the red. I mean, yeah, that's effective. That obviously works for me.
Awesome.
But the second time around, I already know what I came after and I'm okay.
Excellent. Well, I think we'll learn even more by getting to discuss the aesthetics of all these shorts. So moving on to in our discussion of The Duel, what kind of big Star Wars ideas or themes or even just aesthetics did it really speak to for you? Like what parts of this did you feel like, there's that thing from Star Wars that's being reinterpreted?
There was this idea for me that I took as like a tortured redemption tour.
Mm-hmm.
Really loved that line. Unfortunately, I am not a Jedi. And what that might mean, and we're clearly going to get more of the story, maybe. But I was really, really intrigued by that idea and what that meant to this possibly being a Sith or Sith-like person going around righting the wrongs of the Sith, collecting the Kyber crystals, the red Kyber crystals, whether or not they're blood or not, doesn't matter. That's what they represent. And even that line of giving it to the young chief of the village, right? Of just, you know, this will ward off evil. And my thought of just like, what does that even actually mean? You know, you hold it up, does evil has no place here? It doesn't belong here. We defeat it. Like, there was just a lot about that worked for me. We a lot of people, you know, I wish Kylo had lived or Ben had lived, but then, hey, he would have had to maybe actually deal with making amends. And there's something about that I found in this story.
Absolutely. That for me, that was the big thing too. This the absolute sense of regret and maybe possibility of redemption, or it almost felt to me like whether the Ronin was a fallen Jedi or had always been a Sith and had changed his mind, you know, kind of those. I love that there's room for interpretation or assumptions that we can make as fans, because the emotions come across clearly, that it seems like the actions were those of somebody who wants redemption, but it didn't feel like emotionally Ronan achieved any sense of emotional peace. It just like he did what he thought was right, you know, but it didn't actually get him to where he wants to be emotionally, right?
Yeah, there was a great line. I think, you're so humble, or you're doing this. And it's, he was almost unaffected, right? Just it affected by them and affected by giving up the Kyber crystal was an example of that. But just like, leaving town with his straw hat droid, which I love that design, but just leaving town because the pain was still there and he's got to go keep on going. And I love your idea of maybe a fallen Jedi versus just straight Sith or something like that. I want to know more.
Yeah, exactly. That we don't know can be fun. I think I really liked this idea with him, this big Star Wars idea of, you know, how do you choose to use your power? Because whatever came before, he's making a choice now, you know, and we get that great reveal that he's all these crystals. So it invites us to ask the question of, is this his life's purpose? Is he actively hunting? Or is he simply wandering? He is described as a simple wanderer. Yeah. So there's that real like there's a kind of a return to this idea of the Jedi and maybe even the Sith as this nomadic concept of We simply wander from place to place, and then when we see something happen, we choose or don't choose to engage with it.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that? Because this connects, this one more than any other ones really connects to Star Wars 77, even to the point where there's like a poster, right? Kind of in the wall, carved in the wall. Love that. And this is almost what I thought the Jedi were after hearing Obi-Wan, old Ben, talk about them. You know, I wasn't thinking orders and temples and generals for sure. Like, this is how I viewed them growing up for a while.
It's one of the big things that I think our generation bumped up against in the prequels is I think we all just kind of made that assumption from the way things were said, even the way, you know, Obi-Wan talks about when I first met Anakin, I thought I could train him as well as Yoda. You really got the vibe that Obi-Wan bumped into Yoda, he trained him, and then Obi-Wan's like, I can train people. I bumped into Anakin, I'll train him. You know, that it was a nomadic existence. And the fact that this does return to it, even with a poster to almost signal that, is really powerful. And I think it ties to, you know, certainly in Seven Samurai, that is a story about, you know, this is in a period in between wars. And what does that mean to be when everything is fractured and the warriors still remain, but they're not really fighting a war? You know, who are they? What are they for? That obviously then speaks to this more nomadic idea of force sensitive people. And all of it just pours into, to me, this question of, you know, when do you choose to use that power and why do you make the choices that you do? And the Ronin in this is so fascinating because he seems to be making the choice because it is sort of the right thing to do. But there is also a little bit of like, you help me with my droid, I'll help you defend your village. Also, I've got a thing where anytime I see a Sith, I stop them. And there's the big twist that I love is that it's such it appears to be a Jedi, right? There it appears to be such honor, but the way that he finishes off the Sith is not honorable, right?
Yeah, yeah. With some great fighting, by the way, a great duel. But yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So I love all of that that complexity. Only other kind of big thing for me is just that pops up a lot in these, but that real Star Wars spirit of everyone matters, right? Everyone in the village matters. The droid matters. The droid is not less than. The droid is seems to be his only true companion, you know. So I really like that feeling as well.
And I love this. You talk about the post-war and how I love that reveal. It's after the war. You got raiders, which you've seen that, you know, Mando has some of that going on too. And so what you're talking about with the big choices of what you do after all this and how what you fight for still matters, who you fight for still matters, even if there's no war on. That's good stuff for this tale.
Yeah, and it also really makes it so there isn't, you know, sort of some ambiguity of like, well, these two villages are fighting. Like, this is a Sith, and stormtroopers are like, we go town to town and we unjustly, greedily take things from other people.
Yeah.
You know, there's no ambiguity there, which is fun. Any other like favorite little moments that you wanted to mention?
Well, first of all, I'll start, Lucy Liu on the English dubbed version there. Lucy Liu in Star Wars, something I think we've mentioned before in the show of wanting her around. We knew some of the cast before these episodes were out, but just to actually hear her and do her thing. I'm a big fan of the first Kill Bill. Loved hearing that. Loved seeing her in that. And then the Ronin stopping the blade with like his hands.
Right.
That was Star Wars cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In the first time that he ignited his blade in the shock. Beautiful, beautiful. Love that poster detail in the village. The Trandoshan Defender, that was really, really fun. I just liked him aesthetically. And I really liked when he yelled, when they realized it was a Sith, don't engage in close combat. That was one of those moments of like, I would like to hear that in this wonderful story, but also in modern canon Star Wars, because that is perhaps the most tactically sound thing ever said. Just pepper the Sith with blaster fire from far away. Do not get close. I loved that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then I personally love the lightsaber umbrella of death. You know, it is over the top, but to me, that's like, that's the point. There's no ambiguity of just, this is like, to me, it's like this great visual exaggeration of the Sith. You know, the Sith are greedy. They want more. And if anybody challenges them, you know, Palpatine's whole career is, I know what I'll do. I'll build a big gun. I'll build a bigger gun. Oh, I'll build a bunch of little big guns. Like, yeah. It's always more for fear. And the lightsaber umbrella is both cool and just kind of conceptually makes sense to me.
And practical if you want to bat away the rain, I would think. Here's the thing. This is where the series really benefits by not being tied to any canon and not having to answer those questions. I've grown to really love parts of the Inquisitor story. Not all of the Inquisitors being around works for me, but I really enjoy them, right? And the helicopter blades is not something I enjoy too much. There's bigger fish to fry in life and in Star Wars, so I don't worry about them. But so there I am, grumpy on that side of it. And then they fly with them over here. The umbrella lightsaber pops up, and I'm not worried about any Wikipedia entries I'm going to have to answer in a trivia question, a contest, or anything like that. I just loved it. I loved it because it was so over the top, but it worked, and it worked for that character, and it worked for the moment. And even the guy, the villager at the end getting it, like, oh yeah, I got a lightsaber umbrella. It worked for me. And there, that was here's the first episode. I'm like, yeah, you know what? We are on a new path. I don't need to worry about anything other than just what I'm seeing and whether I enjoy it or not. And I enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Because it is just the Star Wars spirit of why not? Let's play, let's push it. Let's see what's over there. You know, it turns out it's a umbrella of death.
Well, this episode had a lot of, again, probably back maybe to that design you're talking about so well up top, but it's like the rolling AT-AT comes in where it's like the top of the AT-AT kind of on wheels, like no legs. It's kind of the similar design. And it was this episode more than even the other ones was like, what if we just made the concept art?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really love that. That's a great point. We could talk about this one all day, but we are going to move on to the next one. Are you good with that, Ken?
I am, sir.
All right. The second short film, Tatooine Rhapsody, by the animation studio Colorado. Ken, what was your reaction to this episode? Like it, love it, struggle with it, want to be a groupie for the band? Where you at?
Yes, man. I don't know if this surprises people, especially here in maybe some internal debate for me so far. This is my favorite one so far.
Wow.
One I absolutely loved the most. I'm going to say this very carefully, say this very respectfully. I don't know how much I'm going to rewatch the other ones. I don't know. This has that kind of vibe for me. If this was awesome, great. It'll always be there if I want. I don't know if I'm going to fire up the duel while I'm working out or something like that, like I do with a Star Wars movie or something like that, right? And that's just me being honest. But guess what? Tatooine Rhapsody, I've already watched it 3 times. I want to download the song. I want figure. I want toys from this one. This one won me over almost right from the start.
And is this because we'll get into the big Star Wars ideas, but before we get into that, I want to get into the big Ken Knapsack ideas.
Oh, that's dangerous.
Is this because it marries two of your great loves of Star Wars and, you know, and not just rock, but a specific kind of rock, a specific era of rock that you maybe perhaps even DJ'd.
Yeah. It has some, in a way. Yeah. There's some mid 90s, Japanese infused rock. And there's some great bands again, going for whatever reason, going to, Kill Bill was the 88s. I forget the name now.
Yeah. I think the Crazy 88s.
Crazy 88s. Yeah. I do love that. But also that when this project was first announced, I'm just not knowledgeable on anime stuff as much, but I grew up with the Robotech in the 80s, which is a 100% Americanized version of the story of everything about it. I don't want to make people confused, like, watching Cowboy Bebop or anything like that, which, by the way, all that stuff's great for those that love it, like our friend Andres Cabrera, Emma Fife, those kind of folks. But when this project was first announced, this is what I envision them all looking like. And if you're a fan on any level, watch Robotech. Music factors into that show all through the seasons. Music is one of the characters named Bowie Grant. Like, they're all there. The music is all there. From Min May singing and Lancer, the great Lancer in the Next Generation story. So I just thought, oh, great. We're going to get some rock music, some weird, like, random singing as a weapon. Like, we're going to get all of this. And so, therefore, this one kind of hit me in that way. And look, there's some very familiar things, obviously, not just Boba Fett, but Temuera Morrison is Boba Fett. It was like a bunch. It was a roll call of great Kenner figures and looks. Maybe because it was, you know, most directly attached to something I know. Maybe. But beyond that, I just love the vibe. This was so fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think I really, really like this one. I have no qualms with it. It's just how much do I gravitate towards specific ones or not because of different interests? And there's a ton that I loved about this one. I love that it did represent a different kind of animation, the anime style that is like, let's have fun. Let's go. There's dark things in it, right? Like we actually see some pretty dark, scary things. So it's not like just fluff by any means, but it's responding to these quick glimpses of absolute horror by going fun, joy. Let's find hope any way we can in the animation style. Everything really supports that. It was also really fascinating to see one of the short films that was like, hell yes, we would like to revisit all of the greatest hits of Star Wars, right? It's got a Wilhelm scream. It's got a I've got a bad feeling about this. It's got Boba Fett. It's got, Jedi. It's got a greatest hits of every character on Tatooine.
Yep.
Right? It is so into Star Wars. Like this one feels like just like the band is excited about making music. This anime studio, these creators are like, we love Star Wars and we want to roll around in it.
Yeah, and oddly enough, of all these we've seen so far, might be the easiest one to just slip into modern canon, right?
Well, oh man, that would be very interesting. I look forward to the band wars. So how you talked a little bit about this animation style reminding you of Robotech. In general, you're a big fan of it, right? This animation style.
Yeah, and oddly enough, actually, the fourth episode probably has more direct design connections to Robotech. By that, I just mean classic kind of 80s Japanese style animation. But this one, just the vibe, the smaller bodies and bigger heads on the, like, I really want a Boba Fett from this, an action figure from this line. Like, I really want a bunch of, like, kind of Funko Pop looking figures from this. So I smiled all the way through this. And like I said, I've watched this one more than the other ones already.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes a ton of sense. I'd love to see the different styles. And I really like that this is a little bit more on the playful style, the fun, the bright. I have watched such a weird smattering of anime. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it reminds me of some of the ones that I've watched that are a little bit more about, a young person discovers power and then they try to kind of figure it out with some friends and, less the heavy epic, but more the I got some power, let's figure it out. Yeah. I thought it worked really well for the story. So what sort of big Star Wars ideas or themes did this one speak to for you?
I focused on what I would call purpose and then repurpose, belief and dreaming. The line that the droid character, I forget the name, Shelby Young's character saying, ultimately we're just a band, and how that said kind of with some slumped shoulders early and this thing, they want to save their friend, Geezer, Bobby Moynihan voicing him on the English cast side. And then how that's like, no, that's who we are. That's our purpose. And kind of, our lead singer here having this Jedi past or what's something going on there. And just using who you are, and who you are is enough to save the day or to make an impact. And the connections of friends and the concept of a band, usually you're so close, right? I mean, I just like that line. Ultimately, we're just a band. And it's like, yeah, we're just a band. And that's how we're going to win the day. And I just love that. And the song, Galactic Dreaming or whatever, it's great stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, I really, really loved, like, there's all these fun details in the story. But once it all kind of snapped into place for me, because, you'd seen these flashes, like, okay, how does this all connect? Where's this all going? And when it snapped into place, it was so beautiful. This idea, big Star Wars idea of you choose your destiny. It is not what everybody else tells you have to be based on circumstance or appearance or blood or whatever it is. And the fact that this appears to me to be a story, really explicitly, the engine of the plot is like, this Hutt's supposed to be a gangster,
yeah.
Not in a band, right? So that's what you're supposed to do. So go do it or else, yeah. And then with the lead singer, it really felt to me like the story was he's a Padawan who survived Order 66. Mm-hmm. and can't even tried to be a Jedi because his lightsaber doesn't really work anymore. So this idea of like, well, I'm supposed to be a gangster. I'm supposed to be a Jedi. Who knows what all the other characters are supposed to be? And them saying, screw it, we're a band. is a great statement on choosing your own destiny. And then to your point about, oh, we're just a band, what's the value of that? It goes to this great Star Wars idea that I think sometimes is underlined in the films, but I would be happy to see underlined in all kinds of Star Wars storytelling, is that joy is what we're fighting for. Like, so often the big stories are about the struggle to restore freedom, peace, you know, safety, joy, family. Mm. But because of the way that we tell like big stories, it's sometimes like we get like a little pinch at the end of like, and because that we won, we can dance with Ewoks now. But the point is, we won, so we can dance with Ewoks all the time, right? So we can have, I'm being a little facetious, but the point is the value of freedom in family and is joy, right? And that's what this band is providing, this image that the lightsaber is a beacon of hope, and it doesn't work as a lightsaber anymore. So I'm going to use it in a different way to spread joy. You know, like it's just like there's more than one way to fight for the light side. That was what I was left with.
100%. And you, again, who you are is enough. Real powerful stuff there. We haven't even discussed, you know, too much that I'm sure Palpatine really probably shut down concerts and fun and joy. No dancing in Palpatine's empire. So this is what you're fighting for. This is the thing. And I said up top of like music or a song as a weapon, that's something I'm specifically referring to in Robotech, the character of Lin-Manmei, her singing frightens the enemies, right? Frightens the Zentradi, singing about love and connection. And it's a female. They don't even, you know, they divide up the Zentradi are segregated within their own ranks. And so it's just like they don't make connections. They're a war machine, and just how music cuts through that. And a lot of that I think found its way into this episode too.
Yeah, I mean, it's so weird to see this and go, well, this is a joyful, beautiful thing, when what it really is a performer's stress dream of like, your show has to be good or else, or truly, yeah. Or else.
Yeah, and just, you know, one of my favorite shots ever in Star Wars, I'm going to say now, is Jabba lightly tapping his tail.
Yep, that's a perfect segue to the final thing I wanted to talk about in Tatooine Rhapsody. Are there any favorite moments you wanted to mention?
A small one, a great Saturday Night Live Tom Hanks Wayne's World sketch reference of testing, 1-2, sibilance. Love that. But my favorite moment, I'm going to use this at some point in my life when I'm about to get into a street fight. Geezer saying, let's rock 'em. That's the best. Just flames shooting out of his guitar. And how do you fight Boba Fett and the bounty hunters? You rock him.
You rock him. You got to rock that Boba Fett. I really like the line because it was a great riff on a much used Star Wars line when one character says punch it and another character, I forgot to write down who, says I punched it already. It's a great little Star Wars subversion. I absolutely loved how much this one loves Star Wars. I loved the shots of the cantina, people hearing the music there. I love seeing the backup singer dancers from Jabba's Palace, Greta, Lin-Mi, Ristal Sant. And then I love that in this whole montage of all these places on Tatooine where people were discovering this joyous music, there's just a shot of Obi-Wan's hut. I'm like, is there anyone living there? Is it just like even Obi-Wan's hut is enjoying the song?
Well, yeah, there was smoke coming out. So if this, we don't know the, I in my head choose to believe Kenobi was rocking out.
You know, you are right. You are exactly right. I was getting muddled on my timeline, but you're right. If this kid just survived Order 66 relatively recently.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan's enjoying a tune in there. That's awesome.
You know, he's going to head on down. Wu-Hair was there. He's going to go get a drink and talk about the new band.
Yeah. Oh, man. This is so great. A subtle Kenobi appearance I missed. I focused too much on the hut and not on the human inside. With that, we're going to go ahead.
No. I was just laughing, and also just the image of this is how I want Kenobi the series to start. We pick up right after this moment.
It becomes canon.
Yeah.
That he's listening to music. With that, we are going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back to discuss the other two short films from the first half of Star Wars Visions.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, 4 Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4 Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to continue our discussion of the first 4 episodes, short films of Star Wars Visions. We're going to dive right into the 3rd short film entitled The Twins. This one was created by the animation studio Trigger. Ken, what was your big reaction to this episode? Like it, love it, struggle with it, dance to it? What was your reaction?
It needed some rock music. No, I really overall like this one. I think this one has... For me, well, Ronan, I'm really looking forward to continuing that story in a novel. I really am. I want to be clear about that. But this one had the most, talk about tip of the iceberg storytelling. I wanted to follow the trail to where this was going to take us. I think they, you know, I said earlier, like, I don't know how much I'm going to rewatch these episodes. But I got to tell you, if they do a Visions 2 and we're going to get a sequel to the twins, I'm on board. I really just love the overall idea behind this of two twins, born, created in darkness, created in the dark side, and where they went from there. So overall, real fun action, real fun look too.
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoyed this one as well. I really liked that it grabbed this one very big Star Wars idea and just went all in on this idea of duality, right? And this was the one where it felt like, it would talk about style, but it was very anime of like, this is the way we express ourselves. Things become very large.
Yes, yes.
You know, in every way from delivery to technology. Like, so in some ways, it was one that was like, we are doing our storytelling style, but it was also so, you know, you can't watch that beginning without it, you know, really reminding you of like, this is a Luke Leia thing. This is a Rey Ben thing. This is twins. This is dyads. This is two or one. What does that, what does it mean? What does duality mean to be, you know, intimately familiar, deeply connected, but also ultimately different, you know, there's a human level or even is just really, you know, evoking the nature of the force itself, that the light side and the dark side must stay in balance. That's a, you know, a great cosmic dyad, two that must be one, but how do you keep them in balance? And it was so wrestling with all of those big picture ideas, but doing it in a very loud, proud anime way.
It was very loud. I mentioned that earlier. There was a couple of moments like, this is, yep, we're doing a lot of screaming and shouting, and there's a lot of electric lightning bolts just shooting into people. and that sometimes doesn't pull me in as much. And I think you're right to say it's like, hey, this is the style. This is what it is. But that said, I really, this one had this looked the most poster worthy, you know what I mean? Some of the shots, there's beautiful ones all throughout these four that we've seen so far, but these are some of the shots from the trailer that we'd be like, oh, look at that little classic design, maybe even a little Macquarie influenced in a weird way. And it's like, I could see some of these hanging on a wall.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I really enjoyed the animation style because it was so, what I think of often of anime, that it has these contrasts, these duality from these like smaller, quiet moments to just huge, huge explosion, biggest of the big things. You know, I loved the lightning going between them. I love the slightly, you know, calmer image of those three stun bolts being stopped in the air. That was really cool. But when it really built to like sort of the logical conclusion of bigness, that the lightsaber was ginormous, and then it was a lightsaber jumping into hyperspace, and something that huge, that just mammoth in Star Wars, could very precisely cut the small part of the armor needed. It's like, that's that's what I'm here for. That's the stuff that, like, that's a perfect example of, right, if in on screen modern canon Star Wars, if you had a Force user who made their lightsaber huge, and was standing on the front of a ship that was moving into hyperspace, and then they cut a tiny piece of armor, people would lose their mind. But it makes 100% sense in this storytelling tradition.
Yeah, let's not forget, Forces of Destiny was kind of positioned as canon or canon adjacent at worst, and people were very upset about how much BB-8 appeared to not weigh in that theory. Like, there was some real, you know, tough discourse going on around that, right? So this is not burdened by that. It just isn't burdened by that. And you can go anywhere. And this one did have, again, with some, when I say this, those poster worthy shots of them standing opposite and the lightning bolts going, you know, at each other, which is reminded me a ton of Rise of Skywalker, the shot of the X-Wing on, you know, a twin sun planet. Beautiful stuff, but just not bound to anything I'd known or seen before. And therefore, I was immediately pulled into this world. And the idea where the brother at one point says, yeah, I'm going to take it to a galaxy far, far away. Hey, on one hand, that's a fun little line and a wink and a nod. Other time, the other part of my brain was like, oh, maybe this is a prequel to Star Wars. You know, maybe he takes the power of the crystal to that galaxy. And, you know, and I just had fun with that.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, the music in this one is a little bit more kind of traditional orchestral Star Wars vibe, right?
Yeah, there was a couple times I really had a New Hope feel to it, run around the Death Star, that type of vibe.
Yeah, yeah. So that's an interesting and fun contrast as well. What kind of big Star Wars ideas or themes did this one spark for you?
A lot of things we can dive into. The one that jumped out more than anything was
this idea of the dark side takes all from you. It destroys. It's not a giver of life, and you can't grow from it. The light side of the force, the decisions that flow into following the path or trying to follow the path of the light side usually are about growth and help for others and those kind of things, and how the dark side so clearly isn't. And to watch the sister, was M, I believe?
Yeah.
Just be even be destroyed or you know, the pain she was experiencing, and that was kind of part of the plan. Like the droid's like, yes, oh my gosh, great. You are sacrificing. Oh, just so happy to watch you sacrifice your entire being towards the power of the dark side. Like, I just, that really jumped out to me about just, this is what it's, the big lessons are about, the light and the dark and the dark destroying, and starting with you.
Yeah. And that whole idea that everything is about destruction. I exist to destroy others, and in the process, I'll probably destroy myself, and that's fine. That's the way of things. That is the way of the dark side. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's a great pull. I think the part where this really came into focus for me is when they were having a little bit of a debate as the brother Kare, I believe, was trying to save Am. And it came into focus, this idea that Star Wars wrestles with a lot of fate versus choice. You know, Are you locked into something that you must do, or can you choose? And like the way you and I talk about a lot of the Skywalker saga in particular is, well, you know, Luke isn't destined to do, you know, he doesn't absolutely have to do these things. It's that life is going to lead him that way. He has power. He has a relationship to Vader. He's eventually going to be forced to make a choice. You know, his identity, his reality is going to lead him to this place of choice. So that's one of the ways that you and I like to talk about how fate and choice are balanced in Star Wars. Other people have different takes, and that's great. But what I really loved here is that they kind of articulate this battle between them, right? Of Am is obsessed with fulfilling her and their purpose, right? Of just saying, like, we were born / created to bring order through power, even if it means giving up our lives. Like, we have a purpose, and it's to do this, and we absolutely should not deviate from our purpose. And then Kare makes this fascinating counter argument that, well, that might have been the intent of whoever, you know, made us, created us. But the second that we were born, we had choice. I think he actually just says living is choice. Mm-hmm. So that, like, hey, it doesn't matter if somebody created us with purpose. As soon as we exist, their purpose is messed with, because the definition of being alive is having choice. And like, that was really fascinating and interesting to be mixed in with giant lightsabers and Holdo maneuvers.
Oh yeah. Which, yes, we'll talk about that in a second. I love that. Yeah, no, getting down to the core of Star Wars, we always talk about choice and destiny, taking a choice and just playing with that. And I was fascinated with this concept more than any of the other ones we've watched so far. This is one of the ones, saying carefully, you give me a Star Wars film that starts with two quote unquote bad characters, two villains born in darkness, and then they split from there, almost like a reversal of some of the things we've seen before. But just being that just bold, they are dark side. They are dark side. And now they are apart. One has made a choice, and the other is in this case, the brother still believing that the sister could be saved. Like, I don't know, something about it, I really gravitated towards that.
Yeah, yeah. And I like that it ended, you know, in a very good Star Wars tradition with that moment of hope where Kare has new purpose, right? That he doesn't want his sister destroyed for this purpose. And then he's off to find what his new purpose is, because it isn't about this, like, I know exactly what I'm for. It's more this idea of, like, I get to choose. And I don't know what I'm going to choose. So for now, I'm going to park my X-Wing in a real cool way and think about it.
Open road. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any just favorite small moments or details that you wanted to throw out there?
The stuff with the stormtroopers just kind of, you know, begging, like, please, please, please help. Please, please listen to us. Please don't. And then a lot of these episodes so far have a lot of frozen laser bolts or stun gun blasts in place. But I'm okay with all of them. Thanks to Force Awakens for introducing that to a lot of us there. I really like that shot you were talking about earlier with the three stun bolts being frozen. Like that, like the big stuff, and really did like that. And we had talked about that in the trailer or the art that was released before. But that X-Wing on the Twin Suns plant, like, I thought they lived there. But now looking at it, they could still live. They could camp out there for quite a while. It's a beautiful shot. I'd hang that on my wall, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, and the duality of the R2 and 3PO, like R-duo in B2ON. So right. Again, really being clear that duality is what it's about. That was fun. I really like that idea, just kind of the world building of this one, that they're wearing this dark armor that's like kind of tech, kind of their power.
Yeah.
That they will funnel their power through the dark armor, and that the big weapon needs of the Gemini Star Destroyer needs to be funneled through them personally. That was, yeah. You know, a cool world building detail that I really liked.
Yeah.
For the action moment, I had to rewind. It looked to me at one moment when they're fighting and when Am is jumping away that some sort of dark energy shot out of her heel, which is just like beautiful, bold, over the top.
Yeah. A lot of heel action actually in these four so far.
Yeah. And then in terms of, again, not an anime expert, but from the anime that I have watched, this one had like one of my favorite, like that's an anime line of Am yelling, "Must I remind you the purpose of your birth?"
Which, yeah, shout out to Alison Brie on the English cast side, handling this and handling it well. We have six seasons in a movie here for Twins. Love that.
Yeah, yeah. And also just for clarity, that's the screeners that we were provided. I'm probably going to watch it both ways eventually.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, but that was one of the lines that jumped out to me of like, I could use that in day-to-day life.
Yeah,
I can yell that at myself when I make a mistake. Must I remind you of the purpose of your birth self? All right. Any other thoughts on this one before we move on?
No, this one's in a way for me, which is weird. Again, Tattooed Rhapsody is truly my favorite of the bunch so far. This one, though, is the most wild. Like, it's loud. It's its own rock show, like we've been talking about. But it's the most out there and pushed to the limits in the best way. And I did enjoy that a lot.
Yeah, me too. Oh, very well said. So with that, we will move on to the final one we're discussing this week. Is episode 4, short film 4, The Village Bride by the animation studio Cinema Citrus, or Kinema. It's cinema with a K. What was your reaction to this episode? Like it, love it, struggle with it? How many times have you watched this one?
A couple times now. I really like it. The placement of it coming out of this big, loud rock show of the Twins episode, this one took me a second to figure out what was going on. It's the one that reminds me most, actually directly, some of the designs of the faces, the characters. Character design really syncs up with the stuff I keep referencing Robotech, because that's really my only reference, even though I'm very familiar with some of the other things and Last Airbender. And, you know, anytime you hang around Andres Cabrera for 1-2 minutes, he's going to ask you if you watched any anime yet. And it's a great conversation. I respect the passion of those that love it. But this one reminded me of some of even the characters I've seen in Robotech. And that's just, as for an 80s American kid, it's just fun for me. I was having a good time enjoying that. But that said, this episode took a little while for me to grow to as the story unfolded, but I loved everything about it. I love what's there. It has the least direct Star Wars designs for me. Some of the characters, the outfit, just the plain outfits, like the Village Bride sisters, she's wearing a cool pair of shorts. We don't see that in Star Wars a lot. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. I just was like, it was its own thing to me. And then they brought in some wonderful stuff. And then when it worked, jumping ahead, like when our main character here, F, right?
I believe that's what I have from the credits is I believe F is the Jedi, the reluctant Jedi.
They're talking about all these things. When she says the Force, you know, the Force will be with you. When she actually says that line, I was moved. Because they it was like they brought in something. Oh, not just that I know that, but just it really brought it all home and tied it up for me. So I really did like this one and want to live with this one a little bit more too.
Awesome. Yeah, for me, I really loved this one. This one, like when I watched the duo, I was like, wow, this is amazing. Really enjoyed both of the other two. But then this one was a notch up for me. And I think, you know, when I say that, it isn't about which one is better, it is about which one speaks to me, right?
Yeah.
And this one, like the duel, just I think really hit the sweet spot of what I love most in Star Wars, of these kind of rich, complex ideas in a ton of kind of exciting and interesting and fun, strange visuals. I loved how deep and complex and rewarding the backstory and the world building was, and I loved that it absolutely took its time and had patience and trust the audience to, we're going to deliver this information here, we're going to deliver this information here, and eventually the picture is going to become as clear as we want it to in terms of what's happening on the planet, that, you know, the engine of that actual plot becomes very clear. Exactly the past of the reluctant Jedi, not entirely clear. The other character, I believe Valko is the character that I'd referred to previously as Helmet Guy. Exactly what their relationship is, open to some amount of interpretation, pick of the tip of the iceberg storytelling. You know, so I really love that. I just really love that ultimately for me, this one felt like it was so about place. It was about the traditions of the planet. So that was a big part of it. Right. But then it was also just big picture. This is a story about a Jedi trying to find their way back to the path mm-hmm. that they need to be on. And that is just my sweet spot of Star mm-hmm. Wars stuff, you know?
Yeah. Wonderful themes all throughout that we'll discuss, but I love hearing that here. And I love this one too. Their relationship was like, wasn't quite master and apprentice, Padawan and Jedi. It was the fact that he stays around on the planet too. Like, and he has kind of a wry sense of humor to him at times. I really liked their interplay.
Yeah. I really liked him, really liked their interplay. And I really like that in Star Wars. Like, is that her dad, her uncle? Is that a mentor she used to have? Is that a guy she used to adventure with? It's clearly somebody who knew her and had strong opinions about her path, you know?
Yeah.
And I love it being a little open-ended, unless I miss something or there's a press release and everybody's like, yeah, no, of course he's her father. We all read that. Maybe. I'm sure I will find out if that's the case. Let's move on to animation style. How did you feel? You talked a little bit about this one, how this one felt to you, but take me a little deeper into what animation style meant to you.
This one was, again, one of the ones of what I was maybe expecting it to be when this was announced from my limited knowledge of what I was going to be watching. Therefore, so it was actually the most comforting for me. And because it did seem at times the most different from Star Wars and the Star Wars I know, I was able to see this one almost as its own film and its own, like, you could have told, if you took out the Force and maybe changed the lightsaber a little bit, which, by the way, I love the lightsaber design in this one.
Yeah.
The yellow kind of samurai katana, kind of classic blade, whatever you will. I'm not a trained sword fighter. This one stood out for as its own, right? You could have said this is a whole new series, nothing from Star Wars related, and I'd be probably on board, and I'd be telling Andres Cabrera, hey, I watched an animated.
Yeah, no, I get you. I think it emphasizes Star Wars ideas over design and pacing. Like, there's definitely some stuff there.
Oh yeah.
That is very, very Star Wars, including Bissian, like Mayo from the cantina, or what is it? Gore Koresh from Mandalorian. And it's straight up B1 battle droids. Like, there's definitely some stuff from Star Wars here, right? But particularly at the beginning, I think watching the twins in The Village Bride back to back, I mean, watch them all back to back, but the twins really explicitly take some, like, those are Star Destroyers, period, but they're together. He's got a lightsaber. That's an X-Wing, right?
Yeah.
And it's all this great, all-in style. But the way this one starts, In even the twins having a little bit more sort of traditionally orchestral cinematic type Star Wars music, that this one's got different music. Mm-hmm. It's got a different pace. It's got a different style. Like, just the actual, the language of cinema that it uses. It immediately early on uses a bunch of shots that are not very typical for Star Wars.
Yeah.
And just kind of really slowly, emotionally telling the story in this different kind of style and pacing and cinema language that made it feel different from Star Wars. But then also some of the stuff in here is like the most Star Wars to me. The one in particular that I really wanted to shout out is that early kind of establishing shot of Valko, of Helmet Guy, just in that weird helmet, holding up a device in trees, just appearing to scan the land with odd tech. I that was in the trailer. And that was one of these shots that I was most obsessed with. And it did not lose its power in context. It's this one is almost a challenge for me to put into words. Mm. There is something so Star Wars about that, because it's got that contrast of nature and tech, and the fact that he's got the weird helmet and you don't know, is like, is that a robot? Right. Is that a bounty hunter? Is that a guy? What's under there? Is he ever going to take it off? What's that tech? What's he scanning for? Like, there's something about all those invitations of questions in the aesthetic that is like the heart of Star Wars to me. Like, you know, seeing that shot reminded me of the way I felt when I first saw that first shot of BB-8 just rolling. Like,
yeah,
that looks Star Wars, but I don't know who that little guy is. I don't know what he's doing. Is he running from something or to something? I don't know, but that's Star Wars. That's the way I feel when I see that shot of Valko scanning the trees.
That's great. That's a great way to start. No, there's a lot of that. The music, I put a note of the music as well. It was so its own thing. But then just because you're playing with these themes and you're in a Star Wars state of mind, it's so funny. And this works a little bit of a Mandalorian for me with Ludwig's music there of it. Just, it's like something you've never heard before, but you're like, yeah, that's totally Star Wars. This, the music there, there's some vocals, some choir singing there. It just was, I want to know more about that music alone, more than any of the other episodes, other than the rock song itself, Tatooine Rhapsody. This music was the best so far, which again, we're not ranking things, but it's the one that pulled me in and I connected with the most.
Yeah, it's really, really good, powerful music. And speaking of big and powerful, let's talk about the big Star Wars ideas and themes. What jumped out to you?
Well, the sacrifice comes into play a lot here, but also beyond that, or behind that, a deeper than sacrifice is that some sort of action and this wonderful theme of action. You talked about a Jedi trying to get back on the path, and often that is, it's one of the things you love diving into too, Joseph. Listen, I'm wrong there. Of just like, when is the right time to take action and what kind of action and what could be bad and what can lead to more problems and just the sister standing up and be like, we're ready to fight. That's the spirit of the rebellion right there. And the rebellion that we know as Star Wars fans. So that was all there. And then just this wonderful kind of a lot of themes of this kind of living felt connection with nature.
Yeah, yeah. And I think those were like the big ideas, and they were really, really powerful to me. And yeah, absolutely in the sweet spot of Star Wars. And again, much like the duel, this sense that it is taking place there has been a big war, and now there's these lingering horrors, right? Yeah. And it's really down to these damaged warriors to choose how they're going to respond to that. So within that, I think we get this great, great story of just the cost of war, right?
Totally.
This is explicitly really dealing with a lot of ideas are everywhere, but dealing with some prequel early Empire ideas to relate it to major canon Star Wars of just the cost of war being literally a ravaged planet. Like, this is a culture that is deeply tied to the planet, that is a part of their wedding tradition, tries to see the memories of the planet. Mm. And it just makes you feel that, like, the cost of war, this picture of the dark side that's about ravaging resources and leaving planets, not only taking what is maybe not rightfully theirs, what isn't rightfully there, but leaving nothing but destruction in their wake in this greed of just taking what they want. Mm. You know, it's not the Empire in this situation. It's these bandits who've repurposed the separatist droids. So you got all this sort of cost of war from the planet and from the culture's perspective, but then we also see it in the Jedi of, you know, don't know exactly what happened, but we really get that sense with that flash of that red blade that she lost people close to her. And, you know, classic Star Wars stuff of she's got a scar and she's not really dealing with it. She's masking it, literally, right?
Yeah.
And you get that vibe that Valko knows that, like, you can't be wearing that mask. You're holding yourself back because, you know, you're paying the cost of war. It, you know, it's not your face that's a problem. It's your soul, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, here's that great line. That's all that war is, nothing but loss. And as you always say, this is the Star Wars series that talks about war being bad.
Yeah, yeah. So then he's really, you know, positioned is the wise mentor. So it gets into this whole great justice for Jedi thing of, like, you get to that point where you just kind of want to shake your head and say, yeah, war is bad. So our Jedi is right not to get involved. And this couple who are bravely sacrificing themselves to protect the elder. Yep, great. And then it swings back into this other Star Wars perspective that, you know, of when to fight and when not to, and when action is necessary, and what kind of actions will continue a cycle of violence, and when is it standing up to defend someone or something, you know?
Right. Yeah. Did Valco, I forgot to put the titles up. At one point was he said something about like, I'm paraphrasing, but I mean, I can't lie. I don't agree with all the things about your order there. Right. Like there's something about that. I thought that was really interesting because it's still, that to me goes down to the core of what this all is. And you talk about justice for the Jedi and how we're always saying, no, the Jedi's intention was good. Just everything got, they put everything on top of it, and going to the core of things is big with me as a Star Wars viewer. I love just throwing it all off and find the core. And here you got sacrifice, action, the right kind of action. This kind of village rebellion, if you will. I loved that comment where it was just like, yeah, you know, I don't agree with everything going on over there on your side.
Yeah. No, I think I'm paraphrasing because I can't find my note, but he says like, I don't care about your code. So why should I pretend to?
Yeah.
And it really has a sense of this is an argument they've had before. And for me running it down, you know, I'd have to watch it again. And I want to watch it again is almost this idea that whatever trauma she went through in the war, whatever loss that she had, some part of the code said, well, then now you don't get involved anymore.
Yes.
Because that seems to be what he's pushing for. Right. Mm-hmm. And it does. It goes to that. Like, do you follow the rules of the code, or do you fall, you know, reattach to the spirit of why you have made this choice, you know?
Right.
Which really to me dives into this other just really big idea of the Force just as nature, that
yes.
The Force is, you know, it is, as Yoda says, you know, it's everywhere. It's in us. It is what we are made of. It is between the rock and the tree. You know, it just is everything. So that idea is so celebrated by seeing this culture that is utterly connected to the planet, right? So it's a culture that is invested in this idea of nature being the Force, and it gets into prequel, you know, a symbiont circle. We're all connected. And when the Jedi does find the act at the end, to me, all that stuff made it feel like she is standing up for these villagers, of course, but almost more like standing up for nature and the planet, and therefore like the Force itself. Like what you guys are doing is an affront to the planet, to nature, therefore the Force itself. I'm standing up for all of these things in one.
Yeah, and it's just a beautiful reminder of the folks in the village willing to do that as well, and that this part of what maybe drove her forward was powerful, and the use of the mask and the scar coming off, and just a Jedi getting back on the path. You're right. That's a good, powerful thing.
Yeah, so, and just I was really affected by her speech, saying you can't change the river's flow by casting a stone, but live in harmony with nature, and you'll change together. Yeah. The people of this world know that well. You know, the breath of life becomes wind and will always respond. And like, to me, that's like just really about like her setting aside her wounds, her baggage, and really getting in touch with the Force, the, you know, the her vision of a higher power. And it is, you know, kind of calling her to act in this moment, right? That's not her saying like, I'm going to go out and I heard there's some bad things going on, so I'm going to go out and fight a war. It's just like right now, the path of the river, path of the wind is directing you to take action and defend these people. So don't fight it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, going to the core of that stuff and the beautiful use of nature, water. There's a little bit of cleansing at the end for her. This her own kind of redemption story. We talked about the one up top with the Ronin. Now this is hers, and a great character design too. Small note too, but I just loved everything about that character.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for letting me lose my mind a little bit on this one, because it's a favorite. Any other little moments that you wanted to discuss about the Village Bride?
Well, up top, I said, you know, this one in terms of just design was maybe the least Star Wars like, the music. But again, the lightsaber was a wonderful design, like I said. But then you mentioned the battle droids, and I wanted to highlight that. Great battle droid humor. You have Matthew Wood back, and they didn't change anything. And I absolutely love that. I took that as a comment on the wonderful craziness of the prequels in their designs, of just how creative and inventive and outside the box they were back in 99, 2002, and 2005, that we could just take the battle droids, drop them right in the middle of this thing that looks to maybe the least like Star Wars to me of the four I've watched so far. But it was like, no. But the battle droids, 100%. That's what they are.
Yeah, and there's so many good little battle droid moments when Valko throws his helmet and they all look up together and go, oh. Like, yeah, this one was so its own thing, but also, like, that's just straight out of the Clone Wars animated series, right?
Totally.
Yeah. Another just a fun moment, mentioned some of the big moments, but a fun moment for me, just visually, there's so much great weight with Star Wars with what do masks mean? You know, what is being expressed or what is being contained by them. So to see this this reluctant Jedi with that mask being handed a drink by a friendly server, and, you know, she seems kind of surprised, and Velka's like, no, this is their tradition, they welcome everyone, and this very friendly server handing her a drink, and just the immediate visual sort of image of she is restricting herself from the basic, you know, joys of being human and being social.
Yeah, drink at a party. Come on.
Exactly. Come on.
Kenobi would be like, no, take the drink.
Yeah, you'd have to turn Kenobi away.
Yeah.
From that server. I think it's the server who also says, this drink isn't strong enough, which is a fun line. Final big moment for me is just, we've already mentioned it, but just like, for me, the way all these ideas funneled together to that moment of action where she ignites that blade and that great moment of pure Jedi defense. Stopping the bolt, and then all eyes turn to her, and that classic Jedi moment combined with the different design of that cool thin blade that was just a perfect mix of new and old for me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I want that. I want that lightsaber available somewhere.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that then as we close out. That's our big look at the first four episodes. We'll dig into the five remaining episodes. But sometimes when we're doing big reviews, so we can get into the depths, we want to make sure that we take a step back and really enjoy the fun and the thrill and the joy as well. And for me, that means action figures. So, Ken, if you could have any merch of any kind inspired by these episodes, what do you want?
Yeah, I tipped my hand a little bit there, but you go back to Tatooine Rhapsody. Give me every one of those characters, especially the band, released in some kind of not the regular size Funko Pop ones, but like kind of the mini ones that are poseable. Give me some oversized heads. Give me a giant geezer with a bass guitar. When Geezer drops to his back and is playing the bass guitar and just pops back up, hey, it's just so silly, but I just loved everything about it. So I want to collect Tatooine Rhapsody figures. And then, like I said, give me some of these lightsaber designs at Galaxy's Edge. I'll even build an umbrella lightsaber.
I think that is a very good choice. I think for me, I always go to action figures. My first love, of course, is the 3 3/4. So I would love a 3 3/4 of the Ronin. And then the Jedi from the Village Bride. And then for non-action figure things, you know, I feel bad leaving out one of the best things that you can buy in Star Wars merch, which is bed sheets. I think I want some really wild bed sheets that have images of all these characters. You know, I want to wake up seeing that Trandoshan from the village staring at me or from the duel.
Yeah, they have the Tusken Raider there too, doing the classic scream. Yeah, do that.
Yeah, and he just giant lightsaber from the twins that takes up half of the bed sheet. Final thing for me is just because it's so great to see it, a cool lightsaber that we could use practically. Do you want lightsaber microphones to podcast on, Ken?
Absolutely. I can't believe we haven't had. I have lightsaber a knife, fork, and spoon set, so why don't I have a microphone?
Exactly. We have so many lightsaber things. Please let us talk into one. That's all we want. All right. Any closing thoughts on these first few short films of Star Wars Visions?
This is just, it's been a remarkable journey. Like I said, a big win for just what they're trying to do here. Influences, looking back, looking forward, and this circle now complete, like you said earlier. Really loved it. And I'm having fun as a Star Wars fan who I'm not a super, super canon junkie that I'm worried about it too much, but sometimes I find myself less emotionally invested if I know, I don't know, it doesn't really count. And I love that I turned this on and I didn't have to deal with that. I didn't have to play with that. I just got to enjoy what was there. And there's some wonderful depths and there's some crazy stuff we haven't seen before. And I'm really enjoying the experience. I can't wait to click play on the next five.
Yeah, me too. And I will just echo what you're saying of, I love everything that we get to speculate on and enjoy when it comes to, you know, modern canon Star Wars. But when all of those things are removed, when you're not wondering what's going to happen next, you're not wondering how it's going to line up, you're not, you know, wondering who else is going to appear, it makes it so our conversations, like you and I just had, are about the big ideas.
Yeah.
And the style and the aesthetic, and it with some of that conversation that we're really used to having, particularly in modern Star Wars, stripped away, we really get to talk about the core of Star Wars. So talking about these things that are not canon directs us to really talk about what we truly love in Star Wars and why.
Yeah. And I hope, you know, at the time of this recording, it's not released to the general public. Time of the release, we'll know kind of the general opinions. I am hopeful that this will help a lot of Star Wars fans connect with those cores and why we keep hammering on them, not the fans, the core themes in Star Wars and why they're powerful and work for us as fans.
Yeah, core themes and the things that just make you go, oh, that's cool. I want one of those.
Like a bass playing hut.
Like a bass playing hut or a lightsaber umbrella of death. I want one of those. Well, that's it, Ken. Do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Absolutely. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're available on a lot of different spots. Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Amazon Music, and Spotify. We touched on it Tuesday. We're not going to spend a ton of time on it. If you're listening on Apple, we know most of you do. Recent bugs with Apple have made sometimes some users are experiencing automatic downloads being turned off and catalogs of Force Center episodes being deleted. There's some updates to fix that bug from Apple. Check on that if it's affected you. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. And support our own adventures by going to our websites like mine, Ken Napsok, or just follow me at Ken Napsok. You can go to kennapsok.com, get information about other things I've been doing, comedy shows in New York. I think San Francisco is coming soon. DC coming soon. Stand by for that. I also have a Kickstarter going with the fine folks at GPA. Just search on Kickstarter for Futility, the actual game of living. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And if you want to check out my other comedy adventures, my podcast Obsessed, shows I've written for, past comedy albums, that book I wrote several years ago now, that's all on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Geezer the Hutt, this has been Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.